Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you wish for.
Yes, as they say, let's get started. Tonight we have a really interesting guest with us. Ed Brown is in the house. And what does Ed do for his job? Well, Ed is a pet transporter. And what is a pet transporter? Someone who brings people's pets from one place to another, even if it's across the entire United States, just to make sure the pet arrives safely and unharmed when they cannot fly or go by other means. But Ed also has a very interesting side note hobby, just as many of us do. He likes to run toward the paranormal. Anything cryptid, anything Bigfoot, you name it, Ed will be there, standing first in line. I found him to be a very interesting gentleman on this show, and I think you will too, because once we get into our discussions about this and that, I think by the time the show ends, you pretty much know where Ed stands and where I stand regarding our experiences and our enthusiasm about the paranormal. We better get started. It's a long show. So as they say, sit back and relax and get ready for my guest, Mr. Ed Brown.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Well, hello, Ed, and thank you so much for being on the show today.
Well, thank you, Dr. Schultz. It's great to be here. I appreciate the offer. Looking forward to it.
Very interesting, man. We are going to have such a good talk tonight. I met Ed at a conference in Vernal, Utah just recently, and I just said to myself, I need to get this man on my show. So here he is, and so we're going to have a really good talk tonight. Ed, you know, when I start out my interviews, I am very much, I would say, curious, and I think my listeners and my viewers are curious too, about how we always come to be. And I like to go back as far as possible and just basically ask the question, at what point in your life did you start getting intrigued or curious about the paranormal or anything otherworldly? Let's start with that.
Great question. Great start, actually, because I was your normal little kid. I didn't have a whole lot of interest other than going to play baseball or going outside to play football or tag or whatever the case may be. And I was in elementary school, and I was doing a reading fair where we got to sit in a library and we had to read all day long. Mm-hmm. If you dozed off, you were kicked out. It was an elimination type thing, you know? And so I was reading pretty much anything I could find. And I saw a book on Bigfoot. So I I thought, oh, that looks cool, you know. So I grabbed it and I go sit down. I'm reading this book, and it talked about the Patterson-Gimlin film. So I was like, oh, that's kind of cool, you know. So I made sure I found the film, I looked at it, and that, you know, alone was enough to, I was hooked for life, you know. And it was such a, it's a really unique feeling when you get that, wow, monsters are real. You know, and that's kind of how it got started.
So how old do you think you were around that age?
Oh, boy. I don't know, probably 10, 11 years old, probably something like that. Yeah.
And so that's interesting, because I know when I was growing up, and I think you're maybe, you know, Ed's just a young sprout compared to me here. But, you know, the thing is that we didn't really have too much of that back in my day, in the library or anything. And of course, I lived in an area in Minnesota that really didn't have anyone call attention to those types of things either. So where you live, though, did you find that this was something that was being reported? Because you mentioned Bigfoot, but where, don't disclose where you lived, but maybe it would help our viewers and listeners. What state did you live in at the time?
Yeah, I was born and raised in Ohio. And yeah, there was, interestingly enough, you know, if you go back and you look, at least this was the data from, let's say, 8 years ago. I haven't checked recently, but the when you talk about where Bigfoot was sighted the most, mm-hmm. you always had Washington, Oregon, and California. Yep. Surprisingly, number four was Ohio. So mm-hmm. Ohio was a big hotspot when it came to, you know, the cryptid paranormal. And it's not just Bigfoot. I mean, right there on the Ohio border is the Mothman. You know, we've mm-hmm. got the list goes on, but yeah, so Ohio is a hotspot for cryptid and paranormal, which is cool.
That's interesting, because just recently, and I don't know what it's going to be like a year from now, but there's been a lot of reports about and a lot of focus, from what I can tell, on Ohio. And I have talked to a number of people, both in Michigan and Ohio, where these things are occurring on a regular basis. They just don't pop up and leave. But you mentioned Mothman, and I just I've once in a while mentioned this on my shows that I believe I have had an encounter with Mothman when I was on the bridge, the Minneapolis bridge, the evening by myself at rush hour with nobody on the bridge before it collapsed. And so, yeah. And someone had reported that they thought they saw. Now, keep in mind, when people report, this is not actually based or anything, but, you know, Mothman sightings are always happening. It seems like before a tragedy or just at a tragedy. And I mean, the only thing that I talk about this very freely, and I also have it in my book, I said that when I went over the bridge, which was during rush hour, and I noticed that there was nobody else on the bridge, and I know that they're doing construction at the time, so that might have been a contributing factor. But one of the things that I thought was, something is very off here. And I just felt very unnerved. And Ed, I'm going to ask you this in just a second, because I'm going to see if we can make some connections here. But yeah, when it had collapsed, you know, the next day and everything, I just about, you know, fainted, because then someone reported this thing flying. But I'm going to ask you just a general question now. And that question is, when you were younger, or even as you were aging, did you ever notice within yourself that you might have been a little bit more sensitive to picking up things and situations than most people? What are your thoughts on that?
That's a great question, and I'm gonna give you an honest answer, because you're the first person I've ever had this conversation with publicly. All right, mm-hmm. I've talked to several people privately about it, but I've never talked publicly about this. But I have this, I don't know, knack, I guess you could call it. Yeah. If I see a place, I feel it's haunted. Mm-hmm. I feel the spirits. You know, I feel mm-hmm. something is there. I don't have to go anywhere near it. I've had the feeling, I'd be driving and I go, oh my gosh. And it comes out of nowhere. And it's this overwhelming, almost a feeling of dread that hits me, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was coming through, I was going from North Dakota down through South Dakota. And I had just crossed the state line. And I cannot remember the highway I was on, but I'm driving and it hit me so hard. I mean, I was like, whoa, I just assumed these woods were haunted, you know? Mm-hmm. And then as I drove, like maybe another quarter mile, there was this row of trees on my left side, and just around the trees was this house. And as soon as I saw it, it was like, oh my gosh, yeah. I know that place is evil. Now, I'm not saying every place I get that feeling from is evil, right, but there's something there. That place was evil. So do I think I'm not psychic. I don't see, you know, spirits. I don't communicate. I don't, none of that, but I do have, I believe anyway, I have a knack for feeling it, you know, and I can't explain it. I don't know what's there. I don't know what I'm feeling, and I've never really looked into it other than it's just my thing, you know, but it's like it is a very heavy, overwhelming, you know, feeling of doom. You know, it's like my stomach starts to churn. I feel like something bad is going to happen. You know, I get that. It's weird. It's weird though. But yeah, so psychic, sensitive, no, but I do feel it, you know? So, yeah.
That's the way I felt on that bridge that night. And it was worse the next day, actually, when I heard it collapse, because then it confirmed and validated my feeling that I had driving over that bridge. Call it coincidence, call it premonitions. Now, I had premonitions when I was very young, age 3, 4, and I would see things. I would dream them, and then I would see them occur on television the next day. And I passed it off for a while as coincidence, or that I was causing these incidents. And so, you know, when you get older, which I am now, and you look back at your life a little bit, and you really start to think about some of these things that we thought were coincidences, or maybe they weren't after all, then you begin to wonder a little bit. Now, how old do you think you were, Ed, when do you think you were always sensitive or felt this dread feeling inside of you even at a younger age?
You know, I mean, that's possible. I mean, I'm sure that I did. I just didn't recognize it for what it was until later. But I mean, I was probably in my 30s before I ever thought, maybe I'm feeling a spirit, maybe I'm feeling a haunting, you know. And again, they're not talking to me, nobody's saying anything to me, I'm not seeing spirits or nothing like that. I'm not, you know, predicting it. It's nothing like that. It's just I get this overwhelming feeling of dread that I get when I pass a place that I believe to be, you know, haunted. Whatever, you know.
So you're young, you're reading books, Bigfoot is kind of exciting, you're hearing reports in the area where you're at and everything like that. And so, of course, the question I would have next is, was there a point in your youth, though, that you said, you know, I think I'm going to go a little ghost hunting here with my friends or by myself? Did you ever have, or even Bigfoot hunting for that matter, did you ever have that desire early on, or when did that desire actually then maybe ultimately kick in?
Well, I'll be honest with you, I didn't start actually actively looking until I was, you know, probably in my mid 30s, you know. By the way, I'm 55 now, so I'm an old man. I've been around for a while. So I was probably in my 30s, and the weird thing, and when you're asking me that question, I'm interpreting, I'm guessing what you're going to say, and I get it. Mm-hmm. But it hit me as like, man, I didn't have to go looking for stuff, you know. I mean, I never had a Bigfoot sighting or experience when I was a kid, you know. So I thought it was cool that monsters were real. And that's, you know, other than that, that's probably about as deep as I ever got into it. But I just thought, man, these things have to be real. There's a video of it right there. It is. But then when it gets, when you talk about the paranormal, which is totally different, I think I experienced those things a lot growing up. I could tell you a story that when I was really little, and I still remember this, which is really odd, because I was, oh my gosh, I must've been 5, you know, but I still remember this. But I was, I thought it was candy, and I'd eaten a whole bunch of medication. Okay. And, they called the paramedics. They came, and the paramedics were working on me, but I had kind of an out of body experience, if you will. I remember being like in the corner of the room looking down and watching. And I remember them, you know, pumping me and doing all these things. I don't know that I died per se. You know, I don't think I had a, you know, an afterlife experience or anything like that. But I remember, and I, even as a kid, I told people about it and everybody just thought I was silly. So I never really talked about it until I became an adult. And I told several people, and even they thought, come on, you know, but it was so clear. I could hear them talking. I could see what they were doing, everything. And as a kid, I don't know what this means. You know, I don't know what they're doing. You know, I don't know what the, they had a thing that they were pumping, you know, I still don't know what that was, but I remember it. And I remember that so vividly, you know, cause it was just weird. So I've had experiences that I may not be able to explain even today, but I never had to go looking. Things just happened, you know, and I always paid attention to it. And I always thought, oh, that's cool. There's validation, if you will. So,
that's one of the things that I don't think people, we are so distracted with our focus always being shifted in this day and age because we have a million things on our plate that we don't have time to sit back and wonder what just happened to me, right? And so I'm thinking about you lying there with your out-of-body experience. Who discovered you, your mother or someone had to discover you when you were pretty much, you must have been, what, passed out or something like that?
I don't really remember a whole lot about it. I remember the only thing I see in my head now is basically me watching from the corner of the room, looking down at an angle, watching them work on me. You know, I would assume my mother noticed they were gone and maybe called before I passed out, I would guess. So it was probably lucky that they got there when they did, because I may not be here today
So most people, I would say that was probably pretty close to a near-death experience, or at least I would interpret it to be that way. People always ask, and I've had my own near-death experience or maybe experiences, and people always ask me, well, has that changed you? Are you more psychic? Do you have more abilities now or anything like that? And like you, Ed, I don't have to go searching for anything anymore. It comes searching for me, which makes me wonder about, there's something in our brain called the pineal gland, which I call it like an antenna. And all it does is it starts flashing and making you kind of like a lighthouse saying, here I am, come and visit with me, talk to me, communicate with me or whatever. Have you ever had any kind of situation where you have heard things that you cannot explain? Let's start with that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I've had my name called out to me many times from nowhere. I was at my mother's funeral.
Oh.
Completely by myself. I was walking, actually going to the restroom. I was walking through the lobby and there were people around, you know, in their little groups. Mm-hmm. And clear as day, a woman's voice. It wasn't my mother's voice. Let me point that out. It wasn't my mother's voice, but it was a woman's voice. Clear as day, Eddie. And I'm like,
yeah.
You know what? Where did that come from? You know, I've been dead asleep and woke up to Ed. Ed. And it's like, there's nobody there. So I don't know what it is. I can't explain it. I don't even have an hypothesis of what it could be. Mm-hmm. I have no clue. I've never really talked about it to anybody because it's just another one of so many things that I accept it and go on. You know, it's like, but it's weird. But yeah, I've heard my name called, and that's pretty much it. I mean, my name, but it's so many times that it's just weird. Yeah.
When you use the word Eddie versus Ed, which is what I know you to be, sure. Were you referred to as Eddie in your youth by any particular person that may have termed that toward you?
Absolutely. Yeah. Actually, it's funny. It's funny you asked that question because my mom and dad got divorced when I was really young. Mm-hmm. And my name is actually James Edward Brown. Mm-hmm. All right. So I always went by Ed or Eddie. Mm-hmm. And everyone on my dad's side of the family called me Jim, Jimmy, James. Mm-hmm. Everybody on my dad's side of the family called me that. On my mom's side of the family was Ed or Eddie, you know? So, growing up, it was always Eddie. I still have relatives who call me and say, hey, Eddie, where are you? You know, today, you know, I mean, like, so yeah, so it, Eddie is, was pretty common growing up, and even as an adult from some family members, you know.
Interesting. Yeah. Do you know of anyone in your family that has had sensitivities such as yourself, or do you feel like you're kind of the black sheep that got the whole dose of all of this? What are your thoughts about, and I don't know if you're an only child or how many brothers and sisters you have, but of your family, including parents and grandparents, etc., have you ever come across any information or discussions that other people themselves have been a little bit more on the sensitive side?
No, I'm the fifth of eight. And I've got tons of nieces and nephews and aunts and uncles and brothers and sisters. And as to my knowledge, no one in my family is sensitive or psychic or anything like that, to my knowledge. So yeah.
Interesting. No
one said, hey, Ed, do you know? Yeah.
So no, well, and sometimes if they are, they wouldn't want to talk about it anyway. It just depends on the generation that you grew up in and all that. I know that that was a discussion that we never had at all when I grew up. And you're a young pup compared to me. So I'm just saying that back in that day, you don't talk about this stuff. So I was really surprised to hear that you could even find a book on Bigfoot, you know, in your library. But let's turn our discussion to that a little bit. So
sure.
Who, you don't mention names. I mean, you can if you want to, as long as you feel that they would be okay with that. What kind of, have you gone out searching for, in the Ohio woods? Cause I know others have, for Bigfoot or anything else of that nature.
I've done a little research in Ohio. Most of my research has been like on the West Coast or, you know, I've been lucky enough to go out and research in, you know, over a dozen states and do, and when I say research, when I'm talking about Bigfoot, I do very serious, you know, we don't just get out of the car and listen for wood knocks and get back in the car and leave. You know, we go out, you know, alone in the middle of nowhere. I've never had any experiences in Ohio. I've been out a couple times, not a lot. Normally around Houston Woods area, which was always real close to where I grew up. So it was, and they're getting a lot of sightings now, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. I hear. Yeah. So, Kentucky, you know, I've been to Kentucky, down in Southern Kentucky. I've had some experiences there as well. Are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm getting a call. So let me just send that to voicemail. I apologize.
It's okay.
There you go. I apologize.
No, it's okay. I'm here.
So, you know, I've been, where I grew up, I've never had a sighting. I've been out a few times, mm-hmm. but more just as learning experiences, if you will. But my real research has been done mostly on the West Coast, Oregon, California, Washington. We've had some serious things there. So yeah.
So when you went out looking for Bigfoot, and it sounds to me like you believe that you have had an encounter of some sort, what did you experience?
Great question. I was this was in, I believe it was in 2014, I believe, mm-hmm. 14 or 15. I had interviewed quite a few people, and it seemed to be, I had like 7 or 8 people who had encounters in a particular spot, you know, within a 50-mile radius. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to go check it out for myself. And so I talked my brother and his wife into going down to Kentucky with me. And, you know, we went down, rented a cabin, and that night it snowed so much that their car, which was a Suburban, was covered. Mm. Right. So I get outside and I'm like, okay, I'm not going to go adventuring. Obviously there's, you know, can't get anywhere, but I did notice above the cabin in the back on this hillside, there was a trackway. Okay. Now it could have been a deer, could have been a rabbit, could have been anything, but I wanted to go check it out. So I tried to make my way up there, but it was just impossible. There were like little logs underneath the snow, you know, you twist your ankles, you know? So I got up this one way, and I was literally on my hands and knees climbing this hill. Mm-hmm. And I heard a very definitive, no question about it, 100%, it was a solid piece of wood hit a solid piece of wood. Okay. You know, it sounded like two baseball bats, pink. Whoa. And that's all it was. And I stopped, and I remember on my hands and knees just freezing, you know, going, okay, where did that come from? Yeah. You know, is it going to happen again? I'm listening. And it seemed like I was sitting there for a long time, but it was probably 10, 15 seconds. Mm-hmm. And I turned around. I'm literally sitting in the snow. I'm on my bum, just sitting on the snow. And I take my binoculars and I'm looking around to see if I see anything, you know. And on another mountain, probably a mile and a half, 2 miles away, in my binoculars, and even in my binoculars, the image was probably only that big. So I had no, couldn't make any detail. And the interesting thing about it was I had a camera that, had I taken a photograph with this camera, was really, really nice. I could have zoomed in and it would have showed detail. I would have got a good picture undoubtedly if whatever it was, but my mind was more into what am I looking at? But I see in the binoculars, I saw this bipedal thing walking through the snow. And remember, I'm on my hands and I'm a big guy, healthy guy, and I'm on my hands and knees because I can't get through it. And this thing was walking with absolutely no problem whatsoever through the same conditions I'm stumbling through. Mm-hmm. And it was looking down, like towards its feet. It wasn't flailing its arms, but it was just walking down the mountain. No problem. Mm-hmm. And I watched it for a second. And the whole time I'm going, what is that? Is that a man? It's not a bear. I mean, what in the world is that? You know, it went down behind some bushes. And of course, as soon as it gets behind this old thicket, I thought, man, I got to get a picture. So I took my camera out. Then I'm zooming in. I'm getting ready for it to come out the other side, but it never came out the other side. So I'm assuming it had kind of gone down, got behind that thicket, and then turned and went down the hill the other way.
Mm-hmm. Either that or it disappeared entirely. See, there seems to be a little bit of a debate about whether or not Bigfoot has the ability to just simply go through what they call a portal or some type of a unusual vortex or something like that, where if you just peeled back the air, he or she may have walked right through it. There's also debate about whether or not Bigfoot can actually turn itself into a blue light or a blue orb type thing and then come out of that and be present. There's also a theory that Bigfoot walks into marshes and goes underneath the marsh or the water or whatever the muckiness of that. So there's many theories. And here's a theory that someone had told me once, which is a true story. A gentleman was out in his house in the woods. I don't know which state he was living in, but he was fully aware that there were Bigfoot, big feet, or whatever you want to call it, plural, in the area. And he was aware that there was one coming towards his house. And so he got his shotgun ready to go. And he said, I'll be dang if I'm going to have this Bigfoot, you know, terrorize me in my own house. And so he loaded up that rifle, you know, or that gun or whatever. And here comes Bigfoot marching towards the front of the door. And he opens up the door and he cocks his thing back and he shoots probably about three or four, I don't know how many, but it was more than one bullet that I recall into this Bigfoot that was literally 10, 20 feet from the approach of his porch steps. And he went bang and it disappeared. Not a hair, not a this, not a that. It just went poof and it is gone. And so there are so many different theories about Bigfoot and wondering what are they, who are they, when, you know, what, where are they disappearing and all that. I'm not sure, Ed, that it went behind anything. It could have, but, or it might have just simply disappeared. You know, it's hard to say. Did it notice you at all while you were there? Do you recall
that? I don't think so. No, I don't think so. I was so far away. Yeah. It probably had no idea that I was looking at it. And it was, it never looked my way. And the wood knock I heard did come from a distance. Why it would make a wood knock where it was and what it was doing, I don't even have a guess for, but it was interesting. It got my attention. Yeah. And then, you know, I just got lucky and saw the movement through my binoculars. And again, it was very small, even in my binoculars, it was very small, but it was interesting for sure. And cause the thing that sticks in my head about it is how smooth it was walking in the same conditions that I had to crawl through, you know, Mm-hmm. That's what I found most telling of mm-hmm. that experience. Yeah.
Yeah. And the fact that the things that we would normally trip over and how we would fumble and easily twist our ankles on right. things, it was just like walking on top of it as if it was just nothing, you know?
Nothing.
No I did meet a woman. I talked to a woman. I'm not sure if I can't recall. I did talk to her after a conference and not after a conference, but after a conference was over, I contacted her. She did come face to face with a Bigfoot. It just so happens, and I tell this story once in a while, that she was out driving, actually looking for UFOs that she had seen in a particular area. And she got a flat tire. And of course, why is it that our cell phones always go down to 10% at the point that we need them the most, right? And so anyway, she got out of her car and she started walking towards this cell tower. And because she thought that she'd get maybe a little bit of a stronger signal and all that. And she was in Cougar Land as well. Now, I don't know if you are familiar in that area that you're talking about, if cougars were and bears were a possibility. But she said that she knew of her territory. And I think it was in Tennessee. And I can't remember, but I'm thinking Tennessee at this point. And anyway, long story short, she was really tired. So she laid down and she just knew that if something ever approached her, that it was going to be her or it. And so long story short, she woke up to something that was just a horrific smell, very, you know, foul and terrible. And she thought it was a cougar. So she said, well, I'm going to have to jump up and put my arms up in the air and wave and try to scare it off of me because it's either it or me. And when she jumped up, she came face to face within 2 inches of I think she described it anywhere from 7, 8, or 9 foot Bigfoot. And she looked up and she went, and it looked down and it went, kind of like that. But it actually took off running. She was so terrified and it went off and it went running into the woods. And I begin to wonder sometimes if the areas, and you've been around a number of areas investigating. Do you think that the behavior of these Bigfoot are different depending on the type of state or area that you're in? What are your thoughts on that?
100%. 100%. Mm-hmm. I mean, in Ohio, they're known to be more aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
In the Northwest, they're known to be just more stealthy. You know, even though they're bigger, bulkier in the Northwest than they are in, say, the skunk ape in Florida or the grassman in Ohio or wherever, they're definitely more aggressive
mm-hmm.
in Ohio, Kentucky, Tennessee, in the east side yeah. than they are on the west side. And I think that probably has to do with more to do with the reaction. Because if you go to I live in Tennessee now. Yeah. If I were to go down to the store and I say, oh my God, I saw a Bigfoot. Mm. They're going to be, yeah, right. Sure you did. You know, if I go to a store in, say, in Northern California or Western Washington or Western Oregon, and I say, oh my God, I saw a Bigfoot. They go, really? I saw one too. Mine was over here. Where was yours? Mm. And it's a totally different conversation. Yep. The point I make that is if my reaction when, you know, in Ohio is, you know,
yeah,
then they, you know, it's probably more alarming for them. You know, that's going to scare them.
Yeah.
If on the West Coast, most sightings are generally from a distance because people are out looking for them, you know? And there's a wide space between you and the creature out West.
Right.
So it's not going to appear or come at you because it feels safe.
Right.
However, out East, most experiences out East are more surprises because you kind of stumble upon each other.
Yep.
And then they get scared. It's like, you know, you corner a dog, he's going to bite, you know.
Yep.
It's the same thing with any animal, I think. So that's why I think they're more aggressive. I don't think that they're actually more aggressive. I just think that they're perceived to be more aggressive because their contact is generally closer, much you know, closer together, you better visuals, you know, you can see it, you know, whereas out West they're farther apart.
So let's do some connecting here if there's any, sure. And I'm not sure how you feel about this.
Okay.
So, you know, I talk to a lot of people and they all have their theories, or they've all had their experiences, and or they bring about theories based on their experiences, one of the two right there. So let's move this a little bit into the phenomena, of course, of UFOs, extraterrestrials, otherworldly beings, stuff like that, because I know for a fact, or at least in my perceived world, that I may have had more than one paranormal, what I termed, a long time ago when I started out experiencing things. Okay, I used to think that it was spiritual because I was raised religious, and I'm religious now, but I'm not overly religious because I question a lot of things. You know, so everything was spiritual. Then all of a sudden, I am having experiences and I am seeing things and I'm being attacked and I'm being this. That. So then I move that into the paranormal. Like somebody's person is upset with me. This is why they're attacking me, kind of thing. Then recently in the last couple of years, and everybody, you know, could beat a drum hearing me talk about these stories all the time. Now all of a sudden I'm having other type of experiences, including dreaming about mantis beings and all kinds of weird things happening to me telekinetically, and have been for quite a while now, and theories about maybe I've been abducted and maybe I have an implant, which is impossible to find anyway in most people. And even if so, you can't go to a doctor and just ask for, you know, a CT scan or an X-ray or an MRI. Right. They'll think you're a loony bin. And so, you know, so we have these conversations. So my question to you is, I see evolvement happening with me. Do you see evolvement? Think back now to where all this kind of began. Do you see an evolvement at all happening with you?
I don't know that things have evolved in a you know predetermined step by step case. All right, I think that the experiences I've had, when it comes to cryptid, is because I put myself in that situation. Right. When it comes to paranormal, while I do paranormal investigations, not a lot happens when I'm on an investigation. However, a lot of stuff happens to me just because it happens, you know, it just does. So I don't know that there's I don't think things have evolved into a more intense thing other than putting myself in more situations. So I hope that answers your question. It's a good question, though.
Well, the thing is about it. Yeah, no, thanks, Ed. The reason why I ask is because the first thing when you mentioned about investigation work, I do know, and maybe there are a few out there who will challenge me on my thought here, and by all means do so. I know that when there are investigations, generally, okay, I'm going to use it and term it that way, that sometimes things don't happen, because I find that things happen more if you're by yourself or in a pair of two. Like, for example, my husband, we've been married a long time now, and he started this journey with me, even though he's very religious and never really bought into that 100%. Well, everything that's happening with him now is also evolving, and it's almost like together we're kind of a conduit, like an energy, a battery, that somehow together we seem to bring about these situations. He saw his first apparition, for an example, 8 months ago or whatever, or something. It was within the last year, while we were at a museum, and he was on an abandoned boat, and he would never be the one to tell you, oh, by the way, I saw something paranormal. He was trying to tell me, because he was on the boat by himself, and that he saw an apparition show itself to him and disappear. He would never do that. You have to understand my husband. He would never do that. And so I blew it off. And then he had to knock sense into me when we were in the car. And then I said, well, describe this thing, and where did you see it? And I thought, oh my God, you know. And I'm thinking that, you know, if you're with certain people, so I'm going to ask this question to you. sometimes together you create yourselves as some kind of a stronger battery between yourselves, where you might have more experiences together as a team and individually versus a group. What are your thoughts on that? Do you do group investigating, or are you pretty much single, or only with another person investigating?
I've done paranormal investigations with more people. You can call them solo investigations. I mean, I'm not going out by myself and putting myself in a dangerous situation. Right. And by dangerous, I don't mean in the paranormal dangerous, but I mean, weak floors or serial killers hiding in the basement.
No, it's
true. Excuse me.
Sorry.
So I think that going out and having more people with you, how do I say this? Okay, so if you go out looking for Bigfoot, you're going to find evidence of a Bigfoot. Yeah. Okay, whether that's really what it is or not, in your mind, psychologically, you've tricked yourself in saying that is Bigfoot evidence. Okay, mm-hmm. If you go out looking for mountain lions, you're going to find evidence of mountain lions. Right. Again, maybe it's not a mountain lion, but psychologically, you found what you were looking for, because that's what you're looking for. That's why when someone says, I love it when someone says, well, I've been hunting in those woods for 30 years and I ain't never seen nothing.
Right.
It's because you're not looking.
Right.
You're not in tune. You're not paying attention. I guarantee you, in that 30 years, you've had rocks thrown at you. You've heard things walking next to you, paralleling you, but because that's not what you're looking for. That's not where the evidence goes. Okay. And I think the same thing goes with the paranormal.
Mm-hmm.
If I go out with somebody else, I'll give you a perfect example. My brother and I, we went out one night. We weren't doing a paranormal investigation. We went fishing, and we're at this little spot that I won't say where it is. I'll just say it was in Ohio, because I don't think we were legally really allowed to be there. We had to jump a fence or two. So we're fishing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the craziest night I ever had in my life. I mean, there were a plethora of things that happened. I mean, even, our a little cooler that had our stuff on it, mm-hmm. just flipped over. Yeah. Flashlight just fell apart. Something blew in my ear. It was the weirdest thing. I went fishing, and I set my pole down next to me, and I'm on this log, and there's probably a good 5 feet of log on the side of me. All right. But somehow or another, when I went to pick up, because my bobber starts going down, I grab my pole and my string is wrapped around this log like 3 times. How does that happen? It can't happen naturally.
Right.
So a lot of things happen. I think that my brother and we just kind of lucked into a really good spot. And I went back and did do an investigation with another guy there. It wasn't my brother, it was another guy. Yeah. And we had the craziest thing happen where we were standing there. And I had this infrared camera, but it was kind of a bad one. It was black. Nothing was on there unless you were right up on it.
Right.
And but the audio was working really good. And I said, we kept hearing, as crazy as it sounds, we kept hearing what sounded like something walking on the water.
Right.
Could have been a little fish jumping or whatever. Mm-hmm. So we decided we're going to test this. So I said, okay, if something is out there, take 5 steps. And Dr. Schultz, I kid you not, splat, 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 stop.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so my buddy's like, oh, that's proof. I'm like, wait. It's the scientific method is, once you've done it, you have to recreate it.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, all right, that was interesting. You got me. And I said, but just to be sure,
mm-hmm.
can you take 3 more steps? Splat, 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 and stop. And this was like 5 feet from us in the water. It was just crazy. I mean, it was right on command. So I do think that being with someone else can sometimes act as a, bigger
conduit.
Antenna. Mm-hmm. Conduit, yeah. So being alone, I've had weird things happen. But mm-hmm. when I'm with someone else, I can sometimes, I can communicate and conjure up things, if you will, and that's a really bad way of putting that. But, yeah.
When you saw this, I can't remember how dark it was that when you had heard these footsteps on the water, did you actually see any kind of ripples on the water or
no?
Did just nothing. You just kind of heard bump, 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 yes. bump, and then bump,
clear
bump,
as day. Mm-hmm. Yep, clear as day, clear as day. So we had actually made an agreement that if whatever was there wanted us to leave,
yeah.
it would have to take five steps.
Yeah.
And then I didn't leave after five steps like I should have. I just said, okay, look, let's just make sure this wasn't an accident. Give me three more steps. And I even used a different number thinking that that would be like, okay, you know, and it's still 1, 2, 3. And it was pretty wild. Yeah. It was pretty cool.
But nothing physically of harm came to you or your friend, or you weren't nope. scared enough where it's like, I think we need to pack up and get the bejesus out of here. Right.
Yeah. That's another one of my reputations is I'm the guy that runs into stuff. Yeah. I don't run away from things. Yeah. You know, I don't, I've had what I call two bluff charges, from what I believe could have been a Bigfoot, you know, yeah. I've had, you know, some pretty crazy things happen. Like when we were fishing, I didn't leave, you know, I didn't want to leave, but you know, cause it's like, if you don't keep yourself in a situation,
right.
how are you ever going to find the answers? You know? Right. So, so I don't, things get scary, but I never run, you know, never, ever.
I should call you No Fear Ed. How's that? You know, yeah. No Fear yeah. Ed is in the house today, everybody. You know, yeah. the thing is that you remind me of the time when Big Girl from the United States went over to Europe, and Big Girl here wanted a chapter in her book about a haunted place in places in Europe. You remind me of me because very brief story here. People have heard this story before. Went into B&B it was called the Prince Rupert Hotel. They don't mind me saying that because they're very well known for this. They have at least 12 plus apparitions floating around in there. Wow. And I went to the front desk and see, I had made a reservation, but I wasn't quite sure what room. I had said specifically, I wanted the most haunted room. That's what I wanted, because having experiences here in the U.S. and I have talked with people over in Europe, whether our experiences are, if they're more intense over there or if they're more intense here, if they're about the same. And they wouldn't put me in the most haunted room, she said, because you won't stay there more than 20 minutes. And of course, long story short, they put me in the second most haunted room. And there was a plethora of things that happened, even from the moment I walked up. Ed, have you ever walked through a cobweb before, just in general?
Yeah.
Have you ever walked through a cobweb that sizzled as you walked through it and it felt like an electrical cobweb?
No, I can't say I've ever done that. No.
Okay. Well, that's what my introduction to walking up the stairs with my luggage was. Now, some people might say, oh, that was all physical. Nope, it wasn't physical. It was a sizzle because I saw the maid visually from the 1800s rush around a corner at that point. I got delirious and very, I thought I was going to faint, actually. But long story short, they did put me in the most haunted room. And I ran towards it rather than away from it. And I stayed in that room. The mirror started to cycle. There were handprints on the pillow. There were things that happened in that room. I thought I was going to die. My husband slept through everything, but he was the one who threw the holy water. Well, anyway, long story short, I looked like I was pretty much beaten up the next day when I went down to sign out. And I said, thanks, I got my story, and thank you so much, and all that. But she dragged my butt back up there because she had a question about the mirror, which was floor length, and it cycled. Well, at the point, my husband threw the holy water, but he never saw it. He actually froze in midair, and I went into an extreme panic, shock attack, which terrified me. But anyway, she asked a question about the mirror. She says, how do you stop it from every time her maid would bend over to vacuum the floor, it would raise the bottom part of the mirror and slap her in the butt. Okay. And she got really annoyed with that. And I said, well, I know exactly what you need to do. It's time to take this thing out to a dark alleyway, you know, and tell it who's the boss. But anyway, you remind me of me. I got my story, but at the point that I got my story, I was so traumatized. I laid off of ghosts for about 3 years. I'm just now carefully getting back into it because they won't leave me alone anyway. And so I don't know. I just wonder with every experience that we have, if there's something about that experience that embeds itself on us, within us, or whatever, that somehow seems to give the signal to other things, it's okay. They're not afraid of us, so we can approach. What are your thoughts about stuff coming to you and wanting to approach?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I mean, I do believe that there are people who are, I don't know, I guess more approachable. And
beacons.
You know, whether it's beacon, whatever term people want to use is fine. But, you know, it's like, and the way you put it is actually interesting. I never really thought about it, but it's a really good way of putting it. As things happen through your life, mm-hmm. you know, these things are like, okay, that one can take it. This one can't, right. You know? So now you got to ask, what kind of spirit is it? Right. Are they going to torment or are they going to communicate, you know? Right. So I think that's a good point. It's very possible. Yeah.
Have you ever had a situation with what you would believe to be paranormal to now when this thing started cycling and the ward, I couldn't go anywhere because she had already warned me, you know, basically kind of in a very nice way. I don't want you sleeping in the couch, you know, I couldn't get down there anyway. The place was like a maze. I couldn't find myself down to it, even if I tried. And so I was a victim to laying there I had a black mask on and I felt it on top of me. I could feel its iciness. It sat on my legs. It opened up the wardrobe. I mean, I was just absolutely traumatized, but I knew I couldn't leave that room. So has there ever been a situation, Ed, where you said, all right, I'm good. I pushed this to my limits. I think it's time to leave.
No. I mean, other than saying, you know, things like, look, if you want me to leave, then just let me know you're there. You know, just give me a sign, you know. And again, most paranormal investigations, I mean, things happen, you know, you get weird audio you know, maybe an orb fly by, but, you know, then you have to analyze, you know, could it be dust? Could it be, you know, your breath blowing, you know, in like the mist or something or whatever. So most paranormal investigations don't generally bring anything of substance.
Yeah.
You know, most of my paranormal experiences have actually just happened by accident, you know? But I think putting yourself in a situation, that's kind of my goal, I guess. Even though it's never happened, that's one of my goals. Mm-hmm. I want to put myself in a situation where I'm going to experience something that's going to scare the crap out of me so much that I'm going to want to run. You know, I almost have to experience it before I can understand it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'll give you a perfect example. Mm-hmm. This was in the encrypted, but we were doing an investigation in Florida, and this property is it's got a little bit of everything, and it's crazy. I mean, it's some really weird stuff going on there. And they have this one little shack, and it was actually an old shed that they basically turned into a little bedroom. Okay. And it's away from the house. It's by itself. They called it the Sugar Shack.
Yeah.
And we went down there, and me and a buddy of mine were staying in the Sugar Shack, and he ended up late. We were there for like, I think, 8 days, 9 days, something like that. Almost towards the end, the family at the house invited us to stay at the house. And I'm like, no, I'm going to stay in the Sugar Shack. That's where the activity is. That's the most active spot on the property, supposedly.
Right.
Well, he decides to stay in the house. So he comes down to get his stuff, and it's dark, and he leaves. And I remember saying to him, I said, hey, be careful. You know, and he thought that was odd because I had never said that. He turned, I closed the door, and to me, I heard it, but to me, it sounded like he took out his keys and just hit his alarm on his car, you know, just locked his car doors. Mm-hmm. Turns out he didn't even have that ability on his car. His car was an older one. It didn't have that ability, but he said that when he got outside, as soon as he hit the road, something from the other side of the Sugar Shack screeched at him and scared him, you know, I mean, like yelled at him. Yeah. And he, on camera, because we had cameras set up on the Sugar Shack, you see us come down, but you don't see him leave, but you do see him like he is apparently running because the light, he's running like this,
right?
And this flashlight is shining light all over the side of the sugar shack.
Right.
So I'm like, I gotta stay there, you know. And again, I didn't even know that happened really until the next day, but it was I still stayed there. I stay there every night. If you don't put yourself in a situation where something is going to scare you so bad that you want to run, then it's hard to understand or sympathize really with people who do run. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the next day I was on a property that had 80 dogs buried on the property because he was a, back in the day, some kind of a hunter kind of person, you know, sport, you know, with the dogs. And there was a dog, I believe it was a dog, I hope it wasn't anything else, crawling on top of me at bedtime. And the only thing that went, I was so terrified from the night before, and then now I'm in a new situation, and I'm this beacon all over this property too, that I don't know how to describe me now. I have had the bejesus scared out of me so badly that I don't know. I haven't had a situation that would compare since. And I don't want that because I know physically things are coming to me, and I try to block as much as I can. But also with all this different kind of energy coming to me, I am finding either that I'm having more poltergeist activity or I'm becoming more telekinetic. And so I don't know how to answer that yet, because it's just, that's what I was wondering with you, Ed, with the more situations that you put yourself into and the energy that you're surrounded by, what actually you're still taking with you within you that just builds to another point. And I see I'm on a mission to keep answering questions. I don't think I'll ever get them answered. So what are your thoughts? I mean, right now, have you ever had attachments taken off of you? Because I have.
I don't think anything has ever attached itself to me that I'm aware of. I've never had that happen. I've known people who have had that happen to them. Mm-hmm. And I am absolutely positive that it's a scary situation. You know, it's mm-hmm. and that would be hard to deal with. But I don't believe I've ever had anything like that happen. I think that there are, I'm only going to speak for myself here, but I think this is the case for most people, but I believe I have a protector. You know, I think that there is something that guards me, because even when I try to put myself in a situation that would be possibly dangerous,
yeah,
you know, I don't have that type of experiences. You know, I want to now encrypted. Like I said, I've had a bluff charge, and I'm going to tell you what, there is nothing going to scare you worse than a bluff charge in the middle, something coming through the woods. It sounds like it's a grizzly bear or moose, you know, just knocking down trees, and it's just coming right at you. And then it just stops and disappears right before you can actually see what it is, you know, and there's nothing you can do. You just get ready to fight, and you know you're going to lose. That's scary. Mm-hmm. In the paranormal aspect, in the paranormal world, I've never had anything that I would consider a terrifying experience. You know, I've collected great audio, which I think that, I don't know, did I play that audio for you from Gettysburg?
Mm.
No, I'll have to send it to you. Maybe you can add this to the end or whatever. But it was a really cool thing in Gettysburg, where we were down in the basement of the old orphanage.
Yeah.
And there were people around, but they were all pretty far away from me. And I had my phone like this, and I was probably 15 feet from the nearest person. And my girlfriend's down there. She says, you can hear her say in the recording, she goes, "Roll the ball, babe. I dare you." All right. And then all of a sudden on the recording, this, and I didn't hear it at the time. I didn't hear it until I was at the room that night listening, but it's creepy. Yeah. You know, old woman's voice. And it's like, what in the world was that? You know, had I heard that then, I'm sure I would have been terrified. You know, I'm sure that would have got me, but I didn't. You know, so a lot of things happen, but you don't even know they happen until you're in a position to play back and look at and see what's going on. You know, so I've been in very scary situations and not even known it, I guess is the way I'm trying to answer that question. So, yeah.
So Ed, tell the people a little bit about what you do now and how they can get a hold of you if they want to reach out, and we'll start with that. And I'll make sure that I have this in the ending credits and also the ending notes, and I'll have all that information there. So I'm going to let you take it away, Ed.
Great. I actually have a very interesting job, which allows me to go to all these different places and have all these different experiences. And what I do is I am a pet transporter. I take people's animals and I take them all over the country. Just recently, I took 4 cats and a dog from Temecula, California to basically Tampa, Florida, you know, and that's kind of what we do. We do it for a lot of different reasons. We have a lot of breeders that when they sell a puppy, we pick up the puppy from the breeder and take it to their new home. And we have people who move. Sometimes people just go on vacation and they can't fly their animals. So we pick it up, take it to them on vacation, mm-hmm. then pick it up and take it home when we're done. Mm-hmm. And then we also do like military things of that nature as well. And you can actually find us on the internet. Big Truth, one word, BIGTRUTH, Pet Transport. BigTruthPetTransport.com is our website. Definitely feel free to check that out and send us a message. We'd be happy to get in touch with you. There's also on Facebook, we have a Facebook page also, Big Truth Pet Transport. And that's another great way to reach out to us on there is you can send messages through there as well.
Yeah, real good, Ed. And Ed's going to be out there investigating the world, everyone. So, you know, we'll have to have him back on the show. When I say the late future to everybody, because it's like I want some good stuff, you know, in the next umpteen months before we get you back. Thank you so much, Ed, for being
very welcome
on the show today. And again, we'll have you back at a later time.
Well, thank you for having me. I've had a great time.